Hello everyone, we are the best AMC student of the world and today we are going to talk about the presidential election. Owing to the American presidential election which opposed Kamala Harris and Donald Trump. And you know who is the winner? It's Donald Trump! He will take office the 15th January and now we are going to see how the president is elected.
Hello everyone and welcome in our daily chronic which explains the functioning of some things.
Exactly, and today in this show we are going to explain how the American president is elected.
Yes, because as you must know, the American presidential elections only happened a few weeks ago.
In fact, the 5th of November 2024, Mr. Donald Trump has been elected for a 4-year term. But how has he been elected?
First of all, every 4 years, some candidates can run for presidency. However, they have to respect some requirements. Indeed, a candidate has to be at least 35 years old. Someone younger than 35 can't run for presidency. Then, they have to live for at least 13 years on the American soil. To finish, they have to have the American identity. If a person who wants to be the new US president doesn't respect all of these, they can't run for office.
But among all the candidates, how does a party choose their candidate?
It's simple. Every 4 years, the different political parties organize conventions. During these conventions, all the potential candidates present themselves and their programs. After that, the members of the party choose the candidate who will represent the party at the presidential elections. So, now you know how a candidate is chosen among the others and the conditions they have to respect before running for presidency. But how is the president elected?
It's a very good question, Lilio, and I have the answer. First, American citizens don't directly vote for their president. There is a step which is called the general election. Political parties propose slates of electors. These slates are supposed to vote for their political party, but they aren't forced to do it. People vote for the slate that will represent them. The persons who are elected by the voters are called the electors. It's them that will vote for the president and not the eligible citizens.
Exactly. Then, when the electors have been chosen for every state, there is a last vote. Every elector votes for the candidate they want. If a candidate wins the majority in a state, they win the vote of all the electors of the state. This is the winner-takes-all system.
For example, if there are 20 electors in a state and 12 of them vote for me, I win the 20 votes of the electors of the state.
Exactly. To finish, the candidate who wins the most of states wins the elections. They take office at the end of the term of the actual president.
Let's recap with a precise example. Imagine an election is about to happen and we are the eligible voters.
If we want Yuan to be president, we are going to vote for a slate which supports his political party.
These persons who are part of the slate are the electors and they will vote for the candidate they want.
To be elected, I have to win more states than my opponents. Thank you all for listening. We hope it was clear. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
Wow, thanks! Now let's see who are the two major political parties.
Hello, today we are going to present the Republican and the Democratic Party. Let's start with the Republican one. Republicans focus on cutting taxes and regulations to boost economic growth and job creation. They also aim to reduce government spending and balance the federal budget. On healthcare, they prefer a market-driven approach, seeking to repeal Obamacare and promote health savings accounts to lower costs and increase individual control.
For marriage and abortion, the Democratic Party supports a woman's right to choose abortion. On marriage, the party has different opinions, showing various points of view. On military, the party wants to spend less money on the military and focus more on working with other countries through diplomacy. For gun control, Democrats want stronger rules for guns like background check and limiting where people can carry guns in public. To finish, for immigration, Democrats believe in fewer rules for immigrants, helping them join and contribute to society more easily.
Now, let's continue with the Democratic part. Democrats prioritize reducing inequalities through higher taxes on the wealthy and investments in education, infrastructure, and clean energy. In healthcare, the advocate expanding the Affordable Care Act and lowering drug prices, with some supporting universal healthcare to ensure access for all.
On marriage and abortion, Republicans support traditional family values and are mostly pro-life, meaning they want stricter laws against abortion. For the military, they believe in having a strong defense, want to increase military spending and focus on helping veterans. On gun control, they support the right to own guns, oppose strict rules like banning certain weapons, and encourage responsible gun use. Finally, on immigration, Republicans want stricter border controls, better enforcement of immigration laws, and measures like building a border wall, like supporting legal immigration.
Interesting. And who are the two candidates?
Today we're going to talk about the two candidates. And we will be starting with Kamala Harris. We will answer different questions like who is Kamala Harris, what kind of childhood did she have, or what type of studies did she do? What would she have brought to the country if she had been elected? Firstly, let's talk about her life. Kamala Harris was born in October in 1964 in Oakland, California. Her father was a university professor at Stanford University. Her mother had to combine two jobs to take care of Kamala and her sister. She had a job in a hospital and a teaching job at a university. Kamala grew up in Canada before moving to California, where she was mainly raised by her Indian mother, who always inspired her. In an interview, she revealed that her mother often told her, "Kamala, you can be the first to do many things." Nowadays, we can say that this is what she did. She studied economics and political science at Howard University. This woman has a series of achievements to her credits, which will give her a place in the USA's history. She had multiple careers. She started as a deputy prosecutor, then she served as an attorney general of California and was known for being the first black woman to do it.
In 2021, she became the first black woman to be vice president of the United States. Today, she's married to Douglas Hemhoff and she's a stepmother to his two children. In November 2024, she lost re-elections as a member of Democratic Party against Donald Trump. Kamala is known for being a committed woman. For example, she fights for causes such as immigration, women's rights, and the right to abortion. As the Democratic member, she had multiple goals concerning the 2024 American elections. She planned to prioritize infrastructure investment. She also wanted to expand health care access and to promote clean energy projects. This initiative could create new jobs opportunities and encourage sustainable growth. Her policy aims to increase taxes on the wealthy people and boost social spending to reduce income inequalities. Since its creation, the Democratic Party has had emblematic figures like Barack Obama or Franklin Roosevelt. It's known for fighting for women's rights and lower taxes. From 2025, it is very public. Republican Party that will govern the country, but we can be sure that Kamala Harris and her Democratic supporters have not said their last word.
Kamala Harris has made history as vice president, but now let's talk about Donald Trump, who just made history in the 2024 elections. Against all odds, Trump has been elected as president of the United States for a second term. This is a major comeback for him, as he lost in 2020 but worked hard to win this time. Trump's campaign in 2024 was bold and energetic. He focused on issues like bringing back jobs, lowering taxes, and fighting inflation. Many people were worried about the economy, and Trump promised he would fix it. His slogan, "Make America Great Again," became popular with his supporters. His rallies were massive, with thousands of people attending to hear him speak. Trump also focused a lot on crime and security, saying he would make the country safer. This election was not easy for him. Trump had strong opponents who challenged his ideas and criticized his leadership. However, he managed to win in key states, especially in the Midwest, where many people felt left behind by the government. His message about putting America first spoke to voters who wanted to change. After his victory, Trump thanked his family, his team, and his supporters. He said this win was about saving America and making it stronger for a future generation. Love him or hate him, Donald Trump has shown once again that he knows how to win and stay at the center of the attention.
Donald Trump is now back in the White House, and people are watching closely to see what he will do next. He's always been a big name, even before being in politics. Born in New York City in 1946, he grew up in a rich family and became a successful businessman. He built hotels, towers, and golf courses with his name on two. Trump was also a TV star on The Apprentice, where he became famous for saying, "You're fired." Now, as the 47th president, Trump say he wants to focus on fixing the problems he believes were caused by the previous administration. His plans include making the economy strong again, creating more jobs, and lowering taxes. He wants to improve border security and reduce crime in big cities. These are the promises that help him win the election. Trump's family played a big role in his campaign. His daughter Ivanka and his son Dr. Don Jr. and Eric were very active, speaking at events and supporting him online. His wife Melania is also back as First Lady. She has said she wants to focus on helping children and improving education. Many people are excited about Trump's return, but others are worried about how he will lead. No matter what, it's clear that Trump's second term will bring big changes. He says he's ready to fight for the American people and keep his promises. Whether you support him or not, Trump has proven that he's a leader who never gives up.
Amazing. Now, Noemi and your group, can you explain what is the Electoral College?
Hello, everyone. Today, I will tell you what the Electoral College is and how does it work. The Electoral College is a system used to elect the president and vice president of the United States. Instead of a direct popular vote, like in France, for example, voters in each state choose electors who then cast votes for the candidate they want to be president. Electors aren't normal citizens. They are people already involved in politics, like state party leaders.
Each state has a number of electors equal to its total representation in Congress, senators plus representatives. There are 538 electors in total, and a candidate needs a majority of 270 to win the presidency.
Most states use a winner-take-all system. The candidate with the most votes in a state get all his electoral votes, two exceptions, Maine and Nebraska, allocate vote proportionally by congressional district.
If no candidates get 270 votes, the House of Representatives decides the president, with each state's delegation casting one vote. The system emphasizes state-by-state contest, meaning candidates focus on winning key battleground states. Critics argue it can result in a candidate winning the presidency without winning the national popular vote.
Okay, so now let's talk about gerrymandering.
Hello everyone, today we are going to talk about gerrymandering, what is it, why it was created, and finally its role in the presidential election in 2024. So gerrymandering is the practice of manipulating the boundaries of electoral districts to favor a particular political party or group. It often involves drawing district lines in a way that concentrates opposing parties' voters into a few districts known as packing, or spread them freely across many districts known as cracking, thereby diluting their voting power. The result is an unfair advantage for the party controlling the redistricting process, which can lead to distort election outcomes that do not accurately reflect the will of the voters. This practice is controversial and often criticized for undermining democratic principles.
And now we're going to see why it was created. Gerrymandering is a political practice designed to redraw electoral district boundaries to favor a specific party or group. It was created as a strategic tool to help those in power increase their chance of electoral success. By manipulating the district lines, officials can either dilute the opposition's votes across multiple districts or concentrate them into a single district, maximizing seats for their own party. While initially seen as a clever tactic, gerrymandering is often criticized for undermining democratic representation as it prioritizes partisan advantage over the will of the people.
The practice of manipulating electoral district boundaries to favor one party played a significant role in the 2024 U.S. elections in states like North Carolina
and Texas, partisan redistricting created electoral maps that heavily favored the Republicans, giving them a significant advantage in the House of Representatives.
Analysis showed that this gerrymandering resulted in a net gain of about 16 additional seats for Republicans. This practice has been criticized for undermining democratic principles, reducing electoral competitiveness and weakening the representation of minority communities.
We are going to present a subject that you must know, the swing states. What are the states and why are they called like this? You'll know every this about them after this presentation.
Since Donald Trump won the 2024 US election and is about to start this term, we will explain to you what are those states called swing states or even battleground states. Only 7 states out of the 50 are considered as swing states during this election. Those are Arizona, North Carolina, Georgia, Michigan, Nevada, Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. They have a major role in the election since their votes can sway entire election. In the United States, the result of the vote is undecided in some states, and one party can be preferred to other, the order from one share of to another.
So, most of the states have a predominant party they vote for, which can get rapidly boring since you already know who the electors will vote for. Yet, swing states make the American presidential election much spicier. You can never predict for which candidate the electors will vote for. In addition to the fact the citizens aren't the ones to elect the president, the party that gets the more votes in the state gets all the votes. It's called the winner-takes-all system.
For example, if a state has 10 electors in total and if 7 of them vote for the Democratic Party, then the 3 other votes for their previously for the Republican Party goes to the Democratic Party, since there is a majority of votes for them. According to experts, Ohio is one of the key swing states because the last time it didn't back up the winning candidate was in 1960 with John Fitzgerald Kennedy, representative of the Democratic Party, won over the incumbent Vice President Richard Nixon. Ever since, no Republican has won the presidency without the support of the Buckeye State.
Perfect! We are going to learn more about the limit of this electoral system.
Hello everyone and welcome to this episode. Today, we're diving into the topic, what do Americans think about the electoral system and what are its limits? Between the debate over the Electoral College and the obstacle preventing millions of people from voting, the system raises many questions. To get clear, we will rely on 2 recent studies. One from the Pew Research Center, which deals with Americans' opinion about the Electoral College, and another on the challenges of voter registration for Latinos and Asian American communities.
Let's start with the Electoral College. According to the Pew Research Center's 2024 survey, 63% of Americans, so a majority, want to replace the system with a popular vote. This would mean that the candidate who gets the most votes nationally would be elected without going through the Electoral College. Why the desire for change? Many believe the Electoral College doesn't reflect the popular will. In some elections, candidates have won the presidency while losing the popular vote. However, 35% of Americans remain attached to the current system. They argue that the Electoral College protects smaller states which could otherwise be overshadowed by larger ones. There's a real debate between tradition and reform. But reforming the electoral system won't be enough if people can't vote. And this brings us to another problem, the voter registration. Registration rates among Latino and Asian Americans community, despite their rapid demographic growth, are much lower than those of white voters for several reasons. First, economic. This community, often made up of naturalized citizens, largely work in precarious jobs, which sometimes prevents them from focusing on political participation. Next, systemic. Voter ID laws are particularly restrictive. Many Latinos and Asians don't have a driver's license or a valid ID. Finally, language.
Even when translated materials are available, it's often not enough and discourages people who don't speak English well or struggle with literacy. These obstacles limit access to voting for millions of citizens.
Democracy has to be more equitable and inclusive. Americans want a system that truly reflects their voice. Reforming the Electoral College could be an important step, but it's not enough if some groups are still left out. We also need to remove the barriers that prevent minority from voting. For example, simplifying voter registration, investing in information campaign, and ensuring proper language access. Thank you for listening to this episode. And what about you? Do you think the Electoral College should disappear, or more if we are needing to guarantee free access to voting? See you soon for another episode.
To conclude, the USA has a very different electoral system from France. Both systems aim to balance fairness and stability, but each reflects the unique political culture of its country. An interesting contrast that reminds us that there is not just one way to choose a leader in a democracy.